Send them back!
They're hurting your family too!
Lest you forget, that was a not-so-friendly welcome for busloads of Central American children entering Murrieta, California last year. Protesters forced three of those buses to turn around. With all the news of the European migration crisis of late, it's easy to forget the migration crisis on this continent last summer. A surge of about 69,000 children made the treacherous journey alone from Central America through Mexico to the U.S. border. The numbers were already at a record high in 2013, and then last year they almost doubled. It started a big debate across the country about what to do with these kids, and then the topic just kind of dropped from the headlines, vanished. Mark Rosenblum joins us now. He's with the Migration Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. And Mark, whatever did happen to these kids?
Well, the kids who arrived in 2014 and earlier this year, most of them have been placed with family members or foster families here within the U.S. while they wait for their immigration hearings. Most of them are in deportation proceedings, but because that process takes a long time, they're placed with family members while they wait to see how their cases play out.
And many of those families may actually be in the country illegally, if I remember correctly. Have the kids made it to their court hearings?
The vast majority of the kids who are in immigration proceedings have been showing up at their hearings, and their cases are not yet resolved.
And what happens to most of those children once their cases do get resolved? Are they allowed to stay in the country, or do they have to go back to their home countries?
Well, of the cases that have been resolved, almost 60% have been ordered deported. And a little over 40% have gotten some kind of relief. And that can either be asylum, which is, you know, like refugee status, or some of them are eligible for what's called a special immigrant juvenile visa, which is for children who have been abused, abandoned, or neglected by a parent.
While these children are waiting for these court hearings, have they been going to school?
Yeah, I mean, most of them are in school. They are unauthorized immigrants until the court finds otherwise. But unauthorized immigrants are eligible to go to public school.
And really, the Central American migrant crisis coming to the United States, it's dropped out of the news, but it doesn't mean that they've stopped coming, right?
Right. The numbers are definitely way down this year compared to last year. There were about 69,000 unaccompanied children who arrived last year. That number's down to about on pace to be about 38,000 this year. But that's almost exactly the same number as arrived in 2013, which at the time was a new record. So it's still a big number, but it's way down from last year. And it has mostly dropped out of the headlines. But a lot of kids are still leaving Central America. A lot more of them are being apprehended in Mexico than was the case last year. The numbers in Mexico are almost double from last year. And they're also being turned back at the border between Guatemala and Honduras and between Guatemala and Mexico.
So what's going on in Mexico? What kind of pressures are they feeling?
Well, Mexico initiated what they're calling their Southern Border Campaign, you know, which is specifically designed to interdict and detain and deport these kids and the families. There's also a large number of families coming. It's not clear exactly what role sort of U.S. pressure plays in that campaign. Certainly the U.S., you know, there's been some diplomatic pressure on Mexico to step up enforcement. But I think that a lot of that motivation comes more from Mexico than direct pressure from the U.S. because Mexico also doesn't like to see a lot of Central Americans arriving at the U.S. border because that makes it harder on unauthorized Mexicans in the U.S. If you remember last year when this crisis broke, the president had just announced or was on the verge of announcing a big expansion of deferred action to allow unauthorized immigrants to remain in the U.S. And Mexico was the main beneficiary of that. And, you know, the surge of unaccompanied children from Central America really derailed that process.
Sure. So you make this point that the children, the migrants are still coming across borders. They're just mostly getting stopped in Mexico. So does that mean that the conditions in Central America are just as bad as they were last year or 2 years ago?
Yeah, the push factors, the conditions in Central America are definitely remain quite bad. In fact, in El Salvador, the murder rate has gone way up from last year. El Salvador has now displaced Honduras as the most violent country outside of a war zone in the world. It's on pace for 90 homicides per 100,000 residents this year, which is, you know, a huge number. The U.S. has about five, just under five per 100,000 residents. And the violence is sort of unchecked in Honduras from where it was last year. And in Guatemala, the violence is a little bit lower, but you've had, you know, a great deal of political instability this year, including recently
the president stepped down.
Exactly.
Otto Perez Molina over a corruption scandal. So there's still a lot of turbulence in Central America. But what about attacking the root causes of that? I remember last year when this crisis was happening in this country, there was a lot of talk of, well, let's make sure we fix some of the problems in El Salvador or Guatemala. Has there been any progress there at all in terms of what the United States or Mexico have been able to do other than just enforcement policies?
Yeah, you're right. That was a striking thing about the surge last year, is that the conversation really turned to those root causes in a way that you don't often see it. And the one piece of sort of concrete progress is that the three Central American countries, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, drafted with U.S. assistance and with the assistance of the Inter-American Development Bank, a pretty comprehensive development strategy. And Obama requested $1 billion in assistance to support that Alliance for Prosperity. But that has to go through Congress, and it doesn't look like Congress is going to support that full request.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Mark Rosenblum at the Migration Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. And Mark, are there any comparisons to last year's migrant crisis in the U.S. and what we're seeing now in Europe?
I mean, they're definitely comparable. They're both primarily refugee flows. When the UN has looked at Central America, it describes it as a refugee crisis, and that's certainly what we see coming out of Iraq and Syria as well. You know, the most striking difference between them is that the scale is much larger in the European case. So in the U.S. last year, we had 69,000 unaccompanied children and a similar number of mothers with children, so a total of about, you know, 140,000 or so arrivals. By comparison, Germany's on pace this year to have over 800,000 refugees arrive, and it's a country that's about a fourth the size of the U.S., so, you know, the equivalent in the U.S. would be 3.2 million arrivals.
Wow. And as we're seeing just this week, Hungary passing laws to make it illegal to damage the border fence that they've just put up. Germany now walking back some of its promises and putting some limits on migrants moving across its borders. So what about that? Compare the two this year to last year, just about the way these migrants are received in these countries.
Well, we had some similar responses in the U.S. Actually, one of the first things that the Obama administration did when you saw this surge of family arrivals was to expand detention space for mothers and children and to implement a policy of mandatory detention while mothers and children are waiting for immigration hearings. That was a big shift from previous policy. And actually, the courts since then have ruled that it's illegal. You know, you see in both places some humanitarian response, but also, you know, tough enforcement.
All right, we're heading into a presidential campaign for 2016. How is the legacy of this surge in Central American migrants playing out amongst the candidates?
Well, it really shifted the debate last year back to border security. We were at a point in the immigration conversation where both parties were at least taking tentative steps towards a broader conversation about, you know, what to do about the large number of unauthorized immigrants already here and which of them should be eligible for legalization and what's described as comprehensive immigration reform. And with the surge of Central American arrivals last year, the conversation really became once again about border security.
And building the wall.
Building a wall, exactly. I think that Trump and others who really have focused on border security are largely responding to that flow of Central Americans and to the images that we saw on TV of, you know, those large number of arrivals and the perception that the border was out of control, when in fact, the border was never really out of control last year. It was really that we had a hard time getting those kids processed through the court system, but they were all, you know, being apprehended and processed pretty quickly by CBP.
Do you think the candidates running for office in 2016 generally understand what the reality actually is on the border?
I mean, I think there's definitely a range of sophistication in the different candidates. I don't think that most experts within DHS or analysts who've been looking at this problem for a long time think that it can really be solved through a border wall or that that's even one of the top priorities. You know, the border is more secure today than it has been in decades, and overall apprehensions are way down. When you subtract out these refugee flows, the numbers are, you know, at least at a 40-year low. So the problems are really more about the unauthorized population within the U.S. and, you know, addressing sort of some structural problems in the immigration system that makes it hard to match up visa supply and demand.
Mark Rosenblum is deputy director of the U.S. Immigration Policy Program at the Migration Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. Mark, thanks very much.
Thank you.